Well, we're excited and honored to have as our next guest presidential candidate, Marianne Williamson. She's an American author, a lecturer, activist, 13 books, including 4 New York Times number one bestsellers. Marianne, thanks so much for taking the time today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me.
I know you lived for a time in Grosse Pointe, Michigan, right?
I did.
I grew up in Grosse Pointe Woods and went to Grosse Pointe North High School.
Wow. Well, my daughter went to Grosse Pointe South.
Okay. Well, there's so much to talk about. Where to begin? What's it looking like, and what needs to happen for you to make the Houston debates next month?
Well, I need about 4,000 more first-time donors. People can go to marianne2020.com in order to make that happen. I need that by August 28th. But the more relevant thing at the moment, since it looks like I will make that, is 2% in 4 national polls. And there will be polls coming out this week, I assume, next week, and we'll find out. I will either make those polls or I won't. And if I make those polls, if I get 2% in 4, then I'll be in Houston. And if not, I won't be.
All right.
But I think I will, actually. I feel like I will, but I could be wrong.
Now, you've spent a week or so here in California. Our good friend Joe Garofoli from The Chronicle, you were on his podcast the other day. He wrote an article in The Chron today that said, Williamson began her Oakland Town Hall rally by saying, and I quote, "There's no place I'd rather be than California. I feel understood here." Talk a bit about that. Expound on that a little bit, if you would.
Well, I've spent most of my adult life in California. I lived in the San Francisco area in the middle of the 70s, but that was just for a couple of years. But most of my adult life, most of my career years have been spent in Los Angeles. So California is my sort of natural attitudinal habitat, as it were.
Yeah.
And a lot of the things that are just more the way Californians look at life, you just a more integrative approach to life, a more whole person approach, that I do believe is very typical throughout the country at this point, still is treated a little bit by certain more established East Coast media and political voices as somehow fringe or outside the box in a way that isn't true here. So I find myself being made fun of for saying things on the East Coast that you'd never be made fun of for saying on the West Coast, because this is the way people talk.
Yeah, exactly. And how do you think you might do in the California primary in March?
Well, we have a long way to go. And remember, your California primary now, your early voting begins February 3rd. California is technically now an early primary state.
Right.
Because your early voting begins at the middle. You know, I'm going to try my hardest. When I'm actually exposed to voters, voters are exposed to me, I do just fine. The issue has to do with having the material means for enough of an infrastructure in my campaign to make it out to enough voters. The issue, of course, has to do with some of the ways that, you know, media filters paint you a certain way that I think obstruct people at times from seeing who I actually am. But this is politics. So we'll see. You know, we're in the middle of a campaign. We'll see what happens. I know I'm out there. I know people are hearing me. And that's what a campaign is. People are listening to a lot of candidates, and I feel they're listening to me as well.
You've said Democrats have been successful at raising moral arguments against Donald Trump, but not providing moral alternatives. How do we change that?
Well, what we're successful at is everybody's going around saying he's immoral. Well, that's true. I certainly agree with that. But we have to present a moral alternative. So, for instance, we have millions of American children living in chronic trauma, millions of American children who go to school hungry every day, millions of American children who go to school in classrooms that don't even have the adequate school supplies to teach a child to read. And if a child cannot learn to read by the age of 8, the chances of high school graduation are drastically diminished and the chances of incarceration are drastically increased. That's why I'm proposing a cabinet-level department of children and youth. That's why I'm saying that a goal of my presidency is for every school in America to be a palace of learning and culture and the arts. In other words, it's not enough to just say what Donald Trump is doing is wrong. I want to paint a picture of what could be right in this country. And that has to do with, that's why I want a Department of Peace. That's why I want reparations for slavery. I want to end a chapter of American history that has become a very difficult one and begin a new one. And we can only do that if we start doing the right thing in some places where currently we're not.
Speaking of the Department of Peace, explain that a little more. You have proposed creating that if elected.
Well, on an there are two pieces of this. There's the international and the domestic. On an international level, it's much like with the body. You can't just take medicine. You also have to take care of your diet and your exercise. You can't just treat your sickness. You have to cultivate health. And the same is true with war and peace. Sickness is the absence of health. Health is not the absence of sickness. And war is the absence of peace. Peace is not the absence of war. Now, our current national security paradigm has to do with an endless preparation for war, which we do at the tune of $750 billion a year. But the State Department, which has to do with the things that cultivate peace, mediation, development, diplomacy, humanitarian assistance, peace building, that all gets $40 billion. So in the Williamson administration, the national security team will include in a very robust way the peace builders at the table of power. Because if you really want to be healthy, you have to think in terms of your nutrition. You have to think in terms of your exercise. You have to think in terms of a lot of things you need to do to cultivate health. And in my administration, we're going to give a lot of attention to things we have to do to cultivate peace. When there's greater economic opportunity for women, when there's reduced violence against women, when there is greater educational opportunity for children, when there's an amelioration of unnecessary human suffering, all of these things statistically raise the probability of peace and decrease the probability of conflict. And that is what I'm going to make a core principle. To me, both in domestic and in international policy, the guiding principle should be that which helps people thrive. Because that which helps people thrive is what creates peace, and that which helps people thrive is what creates prosperity. It places in a people where righteous relationship with other people is more probable, and where the ability of people to express their own creativity and productivity is more probable. That's how we get peace, and that's how we get financial abundance. And that is what would drive my administration.
Marianne Williamson is with us. The official campaign website is marianne2020.com. You received some criticism in the past about comments you made regarding the anti-vaccination movement, but you said your remarks were mischaracterized. Can you clear that up a little bit?
What I said was in relation to the mandatory vaccines and personal exemptions and religious exemptions. I said that when people have no exemptions, the sentence I said was that seemed Orwellian and draconian to me. I regret saying that. I've said a million times that I regret saying it. It was a sloppy comment to make. And at this point, given how much I've talked about it, the fact that it's kept alive has more to do with the fact that people just want to mischaracterize me than it does with what I actually stand for. I could not be more pro-science. I don't have an anti-science bone in my body. I'm pro-medicine. I don't have an anti-medicine bone in my body. I made a sloppy comment, which I regret and I've apologized for, and I can say that a million times, and it seems like it doesn't get put to bed, and we might ask ourselves why.
Yeah. Politics. What about the Israel situation with the two Muslim members of Congress that went down yesterday, and Donald Trump tweeted, and shortly after his tweet, Netanyahu announced that they weren't going to allow those two congresswomen into the country. Give me your thoughts on that.
My thoughts are that it was outrageous that the president pressured the prime minister of Israel, and it's outrageous that the prime minister of Israel took the pressure. Israel has, as most nations do, a tradition of allowing the elected officials from their allies to visit their country. And that is what should be happening here. I, as president, want an equally robust commitment to both the legitimate security concerns of Israel and the human rights and economic hopes and opportunities of the Palestinian people. As president, what I would like to do is to visit Israel and the West Bank with those congresswomen, because that is how you build relationships. That is how you build peace. I did see today that Israel is going to allow Congresswoman Tlaib to visit her grandmother on the West Bank on a kind of humanitarian mission. So I find that very interesting. In the meantime, it's just one more example of the kind of policies that this president does that threaten the democratic order of our country and in other places as well. I think it's quite terrible.
Joe Biden, former VP, of course, has been ahead in the polls for quite a while, still is. What are your thoughts on Joe Biden?
I think he's great. I think all of the other candidates are great. I don't feel I'm running against anyone. I feel I'm running with a lot of really great people. And, you know, we have some differences in the way we see things, but we're all Democrats, and we're all aware that the important thing here is that we defeat Donald Trump at the polls in 2020. So, listen, I feel about Joe Biden, about what if he makes a gaffe, if he misspeaks, it's no different than if I make a gaffe, I misspeak. It's like, give a person a break. So somebody might have misspoken about something. I'm not playing that game. I'm not playing that game. I don't want to be any part of it. People need to listen to what all of the candidates say. I think that's our civic responsibility. And then vote for the person based on who they are and what they stand for and what their ideas are for the country. I don't believe in the politics of personal destruction, and I don't want any part of it.
Yeah. Again, the website is marianne2020.com. Hopefully, and I truly mean this, I hope we'll see you in the debates next month in Houston.
Thank you. I really appreciate your saying that. As my mother would say, your mouth to God's ears.
Thank you so much again for taking
the
time. Best
Thank
of luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you, sir. Have a good day.
You too. Thanks so much to Marianne Williamson. Up next on The Drive, the one and only Mooch.